I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Dima Slobodaniuk, who is here in Boston for the first time. I don't know if it's your first time in Boston, but certainly first time with the BSO in Boston. So Dima, after a couple of times at Tanglewood, welcome to Boston. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you too.
Well, I am curious about your impressions coming here to Boston for the first time. But first, a little bit about the music. You have an affinity for Sibelius, clearly. You're a conductor of the Lahti Symphony. You studied in Finland. You've lived in Finland since you were a teenager. We talked about that last time we chatted at Tanglewood. And now you're also running the Sibelius Festival. So tell me about Sibelius and you. Is this a long-time sort of organic affinity that you have with his music? Or did it sort of come to you later and then you really dove into it?
I dove into it clearly, but I think the way you put it, organic affinity, that's a very good word for this, because it all happened after I moved to Finland. I hardly knew any Sibelius when I was growing up in Russia, because his music is just simply not played there enough, to be diplomatic. I knew violin concerto, and that's all. No symphonies, nothing. So I really grew into it and learned it at the same time as I grew into Finnish society and culture. So it all came as one package, and it made perfect sense, because I was 16 years old when I moved to Finland. So, and at that age, you still absorb. Well, obviously you always absorb, but as a teenager, you absorb quicker. It took quite many years for me to learn the language, because it's quite hard. But I feel it's my really second mother tongue right now. And this language really helps me breathe with Sibelius music. I wouldn't say it helps me understand it, but it helps me breathe when I'm on stage. Somehow, something is happening, which just, it's so. And so me being artistic director of Sibelius Festival, it kind of feels outrageous, because me being born in Moscow, not growing up with Sibelius, then you are an artistic director of Sibelius Festival and conducting an orchestra which has a great history of all the recordings of his music, including original versions, and they have recorded pretty much everything. Unfortunately, everything before me, so I'm not adding up to that. We're doing something else. But what we do is we do a lot of live performances of Sibelius music. I feel very honored. To be honest, I really feel honored to be there and to represent his music abroad as well, like this week here and like last summer in Tanglewood.
So the BSO also has a rich history of Sibelius performances and recordings. And so tell me, especially with your experience at Tanglewood doing Sibelius I and now with Pohjola's Daughter here, what do you hear from this orchestra that they bring to Sibelius, and how closely does that match how, to put it in your words, how you breathe with this music?
Very closely. I don't need to, they don't need to be explained, to how to understand. It's very hard to start verbalizing for the orchestra that how they should understand, because I'm not going to be able to do that with any orchestra. But I think they, not only with Sibelius, I have a feeling that this orchestra has a very broad color palette of different styles and cultures. So whatever they play, they are very quick in understanding what needs to be done. And they also absorb things from me. So I don't really need to speak about, obvious things. I think that what they bring to this music is warmth, dynamic range, very natural breathing, phrasing. Something I don't always get. To be diplomatic, there is a tendency for orchestras which do not play Sibelius a lot to overdo it. So dramatic things become over dramatic, and romantic things become over romantic. So because many times this music is strong in the character, but not so romantic. There are two different things. It's based on nature, and nature doesn't have this aspect of sentimentalism or romanticism. Nature is nature because it is. So you have to take it for granted and do things, was it soft or strong, whatever it is, but it has to be done in such a way that there is no other way. Now it has to sound like that. And playing Sibelius music with a, for me, over-romantic approach steals from its power. And I'm very happy that this orchestra understands that.
Well, and you're right. I mean, there is a way that they breathe with Sibelius, and that wide color palette as well. I mean, there's so much they do, and now with Andras, they do a lot of Shostakovich that's added to it, the Ravel, the Debussy, all this. So when it comes to Nielsen, though, sort of related, but not really sounding the same in the end, a very different ball game altogether. And this orchestra has a history, but it's not nearly as frequent. Performances of Nielsen's music as it is with Sibelius. So tell me about what changes when you move to Nielsen away from Sibelius with this orchestra.
That's a very difficult question. I don't really know. It's not that I decided something needs to change. I think the music speaks for itself. It makes you breathe and understand it differently. Nielsen is very hard to verbalize. It has a connection to the World War I. Again, I wouldn't say that this music is about that. He didn't want to give any title to this symphony because the other symphonies, except for the first one, have titles and themes. Again, they're not programs, but they are something to think about. This is what it is. This one, you know, there are other symphonies which are rather kind of, I wouldn't say raw, but strong, which have two movements. For example, Prokofiev's Second Symphony, for example. And two movements, it kind of creates certain asymmetry in the form. Because it's not that the first one is slow and second one is fast. It's not at all like that. Because within them, there are many episodes, and so it evolves in a very organic way, and he didn't want to separate these things into movements. So what I'm trying to do is to build a organism which would somehow, you know, it's a music for the concert, for live performance, and the first movement is the individual, in this case is a snare drum, and he's trying to destruct everything other members of the orchestra are trying to construct. So for me, it's the whole symphony is a kind of a coexistence of construction and destruction, and I want to think about, and I'm trying to achieve it, which is not very easy, that this destruction is actually stronger as it is usually in our lives. It's much easier to break than to build. And together with this, for me, this symphony is a search. It's not like, you know, he sat down, planned this thing on a piece of paper, I'm going to do like this and this, and then he composed a symphony. You really feel that at some points he doesn't know how to continue. And he's struggling with himself. He's not the only composer who does that. Actually, Sibelius is like that too. And many, many times also Shostakovich, despite the fact that his music is very strongly formed and, shaped. This is something, you know, you somehow need to accept that things do not always happen in a pace that you would expect them to happen. Sometimes they take way too long time to develop something. You know, like there are stretches in the symphony which is never ending. And I think that's what is an interesting experience for the person who is listening to this perhaps for the first time in the hall, that to really let go and do not expect anything of this music, and just to accept it as it is and experience it.
I noticed in rehearsal that you gave pretty explicit directions to our snare drum player, Kyle, even to the point of saying that you want him to exit the stage for the offstage part of his solo in a very noticeable way. This is not meant to be slip out the door when nobody notices. It's almost like performance art when it comes to that. And so is there more about this piece that you're finding that this orchestra is grabbing onto and really bringing to its best?
Yes, it's actually everything about it, but it's hard to get into this music because the material is a little bit alien for actually everybody. And that's okay. It's an experience also for us on stage. It's not his only symphony where he uses the visual aspect as well. For example, his fourth symphony, the Inextinguishable, has two timpani sets placed opposed to each other. And that's a spectacular thing to watch also, not only to hear. But this snare drum here, the way Nielsen writes is that he starts by creating a pattern, and he's there for a while, kind of making a point, and then he takes off. He takes off in his own tempo, and the score says that he's supposed to have a metronome in front of him, set to a certain tempo, and he starts following that metronome, not me, which is different tempo than what I have. So he takes off, plays his cadenza, which has no connection to the rest of the music, and finishes and walks away. And then the only thing you hear after that is him kind of, you know, the snare drum has left the building. That's what you hear, with a very beautiful clarinet solo at the same time. So I guess it's, you can understand it socially or musically or theatrically or in any way, but it's definitely visual art for me.
So you have probably heard of Symphony Hall before. It has a reputation around the world, we think, anyway. Tell me about your experience of conducting in this room now, especially in relation to this particular music. Are there aspects of the sound of Sibelius, Elgar, and Nielsen that this hall tends to bring out, maybe in other ways that other halls may not?
You know, this is a very warm hall. Not only it is warm hall, but it's also warm orchestra. So this warmth is something, for example, Nielsen really needs, because easily this music starts sounding cold, you know, like calm and a little bit clinic and a little bit, kind of faint colors. And that's what we don't want. We can achieve that by, you know, phrasing and maybe using certain colors, but the overall warmth and the relation to human being stays there. So I think that's a very important quality, not only for this music, but for any music. And this hall is, it reminds me like, you know, like you are placed in a huge instrument, and you're working with the acoustic inside the instrument. For example, if it was a huge cello, yeah, for example.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. The way, you know, there are many halls which are very famous in acoustic, but they are very hard to play on stage because you wouldn't hear each other. For the audience, it's fantastic, but for the orchestra, always struggles. And here on stage, you really hear very well. That's the sense I'm getting. I think the orchestra is not forced to struggle and to always guess what's going on. And that's why the ensemble of this orchestra it's obviously not the only reason, but the whole helps and contributes to, you know, the ensemble questions. So everything happens in a very organic way, and people can breathe together.
Thank you for saying this about Nielsen and warmth, because I think that I've always been intrigued by Nielsen's music, but I can't say that I've always loved it. And I think maybe that's part of, I didn't think about it till you just said this, that there are moments when it has just felt cold to me in some of the recordings that I've heard. And what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It needs the warmth, even as what you're also saying, that you need to take it as it is. You can't overdo it with anything.
No, exactly. I think music is always subjective to performance. Recordings often make pieces sound the way they wouldn't sound in the hall. And also, if you think of listening to recordings, people listen to them using very, various equipments.
Yeah, right. One last question. Is this the first time you've worked with Truls Merk, or have you guys done some things together before?
Yeah, I think this is the third time we're working together.
Yeah.
It's a great honor.
Yeah. Really. What, is there a way to encapsulate kind of what it is that he brings to the Elgar that is Truls Merk?
He has big heart, This musician is... he does everything with big heart and big soul. If I have to generalize somehow what he does, he just makes music happen.
It's a good piece for it too. Dimas Lobodeniuk, thanks so much for talking with me and welcome to Boston. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here.